Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to the Art of Decluttering podcast. I'm your host, Amy Ravel. Kirsty is not with us today. She's not well. And so I have the honor of interviewing one of our friends of the podcast, Nick Bryan. Nick, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you introduce yourself? Tell our community a little bit about your story, who you are, what you love doing, about your family, and just give us some of why we've got you on the podcast today.
Sure. So Nicola is actually my name, and I go by Nick, and I live in Sydney with my husband and three children. I'm a mum of boys. I have twins who are 7.
Mum of boys are the best.
And I have a 3-year-old. I work part-time as a high school, secondary school visual arts teacher. And by part-time, I mean one day a week, which is pretty nice. And I work part-time at home as an artist as well. Mm. And the rest of the time, I'm just wrangling my children. So
just wrangling
I'm
the children.
Pretty busy. Yeah, just putting my feet up, drinking tea
all
day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, having a little siesta every day, I bet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so the older two at school.
Yeah, they're in grade 1.
Yeah, awesome.
Just at our local public school, which, yes, we're very happy with. And the little guy goes to preschool 2 days a week. So those are the 2 days that I work. And, yeah, the rest of the time he's with me. Actually, I do work as an art teacher at his preschool one morning a week as well, which is pretty fun.
That's so lovely. That would be a very different experience to doing high school art.
Yes.
Or do you find that it's actually quite similar?
No, totally different. The preschoolers talk and the high schoolers don't. Well, the high schoolers talk to each other
and
grunt a lot.
Yeah. I have 2 teenage boys and that's absolutely how they communicate.
No, I mean, I'm joking. Of course, high school students are amazing and I love teaching them. It's a special world that you enter when you step into a classroom. Very surreal the first time that I went back to teaching because I had a different career before I became a secondary school teacher. It was really weird stepping back into that classroom for the first time. But anyway,
so good.
You don't need to go down that path.
Maybe tell me and tell everyone, how did you come across the art of decluttering? How did our paths cross?
Yes. So my third son had been born. He was about 3 months old. And I just became quite overwhelmed. I had a lot of stuff in my home, like so many of our listeners, I'm sure, do. I'm a really I'm very environmentally conscious, so I'm quite conscious about consuming things. I don't really buy a lot of new things, but I do accept a lot of donations from people. I'm that person that stops and checks out the pile on the side of the road and thinks to myself, yeah, I think that, you know, whatever item could work for me. Mm-hmm. Now, I hadn't really been doing a lot of that. We were in a rental, and when we'd moved in, there was a lot of furniture that was left there, solid, heavy stuff. And I know from your podcast how much of a problem that can be. Yeah. And it really was, because it was really big, old, heavy furniture, and it sort of was just, we couldn't move it. There was no inbuilt storage, so the wardrobes there were useful but not that functional. And it was a big house. It was a 4-bedroom house. We moved there when I was pregnant with the twin boys. And I was actually not home the day that we moved in. I was off having an ultrasound.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of trust that you instilled in whoever was managing that.
My husband and his friend were there, but I think they were busy with boxes. So pieces of furniture got put in places where we didn't want them. And we were able, of course, to move a few things, but things stayed as well where they didn't need to be.
Of course, particularly when you're pregnant, you're like, well, yeah, the cost could not move. Effectiveness of my time and energy.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah, couldn't lift anything either. Yeah. Mm. So jumping forwards 3.5 years, when the little guy was born, what we had was a junk room with so much paperwork, all of my childhood sentimental stuff. And I'm talking about, like, my parents had sold their house and given me the contents of my childhood bedroom wardrobe. I had high school, university notes, teaching notes. I had my art stuff, you know, paints and actual artworks. I had fabrics and just so much stuff. Mm. And then a filing cabinet. Anyway,
it was full. Yeah.
Completely overwhelmed. Yeah. And I had a baby who wasn't sleeping. So
and 3-year-old twins.
And 3-year-old twins. So I Googled decluttering and I found a few things. And then I thought, no, I need a podcast because I need to be able to listen to this at night when I'm washing the dishes or whatever. Mm. And found your podcast and just completely binged on it like so many people do. I think you were up to about episode 100 at that time. That was mid-2019.
Yeah. Mm. And so you've hung around. A fan.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, and it's fun. The binging didn't put you off.
Oh, no. It became like I was listening to my girlfriends every night. Yeah. It was really good.
That's the best.
Yeah. And I actually just yesterday I went onto the Facebook community and looked up my name because I was just interested to see the history of my journey with the art of decluttering. Oh. And it was quite fun because there was a lot of stuff I'd posted and shared, and including a photograph of my junk room. And it's nice to look back on that and just reflect on how far I've come in 3 years.
Yeah. I didn't actually know you could do that, but of course you can. In the search bar, you put your own name.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
That's a fun thing to do. I didn't realize how active I was on that Facebook page until I saw the name.
But that's the good thing, isn't it? Because it's somewhere you can come and be and pop in and out of as the seasons change, and as you're into decluttering or as you're busy and back at work and doing different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us, too, you've joined our Head, Heart and Home course. Do you remember when you joined?
Well, yes, my searching gave me that answer, actually.
Oh, excellent.
But I do remember because it was February 2020 and obviously everything was about to change. Mm-hmm. So actually I think we were all starting lockdowns during our Head, Heart and Home session
Yeah, I think we were travelling that very uncertain time together.
Mm, yeah, we were. So it was really great for me, that Head, Heart and Home course. I live in the same suburb. Oh, sorry, not the same suburb. I live in the same city as Kirsty. I knew she was around. You know, I really wanted her to come to my home, but knew that I'd probably need her to come back many times. And so I thought, look, it's probably a more convenient or a better use of my funds if I sign up to the Head, Heart and Home course, because I feel like it might better equip me with skills that I can apply long-term myself. Now, I did have a lot of those skills just from having listened to the podcast, but I'm really a visual learner, so it was quite helpful to me. And also I'm a person who needs accountability and to be part of a community to be really motivated and driven. So the course really ticked all those boxes for me, having infographics and videos and things on the screen. So I could kind of, it was really consolidating my, the lessons I'd learned from listening to the podcast, and just really nice to be connecting with women and men actually from across the world.
Yeah.
And sharing our journey, and people that were going through some big stuff, but were still showing up every week and working on their decluttering. It was really inspiring. So I loved being part of that course.
One of the great things about the course when there's a live round is that you do get to kind of become friends with these people. You know, I've heard of people within the community that have caught up and gone out for lunch together because they're in the same area. And I'm like, that's the best. Like, yes. I really love that this shared passion for simplicity and intentional living can connect people.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm doing another live round now, and there's an artist in the group, there's a teacher in the group, and there's just so many shared things that we have. There's so much that we have in common, but also so much about our decluttering journey that is similar. Another teacher is decluttering her classroom, and I've just started in a new school in a new classroom that also needs decluttering. So it's just kind of fun. I can see myself having lunch with some of those ladies for sure.
That's the best. You know, one of my favorite decluttering jobs ever was when my kids were in primary school, the school hired our team to go in and declutter and organize the art room. It was the best. So we managed to sell, there were some big storage items in the art room that just weren't being used, were taking up a lot of space. And rather than putting them in the skip, which was the suggestion, I was like, I think I can sell these. Anyway, they sold for so much more online than I even dreamed that they would sell for. And it meant that we could use that money to buy all new containers for the art room. Nick, it was like the best thing ever, because there was a storeroom, and so we had all these clear containers with labels, and it was like pipe cleaners and bottle caps, and the art teacher could just go in there and grab the resources that she needed. And it was so much fun. Like, my little year nine Amy, who loved doing that stuff when I was at school, just had a blast.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah.
And also for the students, so much better to step into a classroom that is organized. Mm-hmm. It's a more inspiring space. And I mean, that's what we're about to talk about, is how having a decluttered space really breeds creativity, I think.
Absolutely.
And also that teacher can send a couple of helpers into the storeroom to get things, and they'll be able to find them.
Like, they can find it, come back, and then pack up afterwards. Imagine that.
Yeah, and the teacher doesn't have to do it all because it's all labelled and easy to find. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. Yeah. Some of the things that we often talk about is that decluttering leads to creativity and productivity, and we talk about it in the workplace. We talk about it with our NDIS clients. We talk about it with everyone, because that, we often have the misconception that minimalism or having less and being organized means that it's clinical. But actually what it does is it takes away some of the chaos so that creativity can flow and shine and be replicated, not just, I was creative this day and now my house looks like a mess and I can never do it again. So I would just love to hear your journey with that. I think it will be a great encouragement to our listeners, and there'll be plenty of people going, oh, wow, this is the bomb.
Yeah. Well, for me, creativity had, I mean, I've been an artist forever, you know. I found a poem when I was decluttering, a poem that I wrote when I was seven that talked about how I wanted to be an artist. And maybe I was told I'd be a good artist, so I believed it. Anyway, I did study art at university, did that for 4 years, and one thing led to another, and I worked in marketing for 8 years before becoming a high school art teacher and then having all my children. So the creativity sort of, for me, it was there floating around in my brain, but it was definitely not coming out of me. I'd have thoughts. I found that my creativity, my best creative thoughts and ideas would come to me when I was out on bushwalks in the quiet and in the calm with my kids when they weren't speaking at me.
Beautiful. It sounds like you still had the creativity in the marketing side of things, I imagine, but was it the artistry that had taken the back seat, or did you feel like the creativity had taken the back seat as well?
Yeah, the artistry, you're right. Yeah, I did. It was really creative work that I was doing in marketing, coming up with sort of, marketing campaigns and also just visual promotional materials, billboards. advertising, that kind of stuff.
Working with graphic designers, the hard stuff was missing.
And also in the marketing role, I was in the entertainment industry. It was quite formulaic. I was getting sent marketing material from overseas. There wasn't a great deal of design involved. I just really wanted to be making my own art again, but didn't think that was something that I could have an income from. So also knew that I, well, in my heart, I felt that I'd be a great teacher. And my mum had been a high school teacher and she was very happy the day that I told her I'd signed up to do a teaching degree. And it really was. It's been a great fit for me. I think it's something I meant to do. But yeah, I don't think at that point when I went into teaching that I felt the need to be making art.
Mm-hmm.
It's really something that sort of happened for me in the last few years. Yeah, anyway, I remember as well going away with girlfriends and having this quiet time, and I just started writing and writing down ideas for children's books, which is something else I'm quite interested in and have been since grade six when my amazing teacher, Miss Anna Blakeney from Lane Cove Public School, brought an author into the school. Yeah, well, you know, because I think we need to honour the amazing teachers in our lives, and she was awesome. And she brought an author into our class, and I was really inspired by that. So started writing down ideas for children's books and talking to creative girlfriends about, you know, how could I bring this to life? And one of them said to me, the story I wanted to write was about these children, my own children, of course, who were collectors. We would go on bushwalks or to the playground and they were picking up stuff, bottle tops, gum nuts, plastic lids, soy sauce fish, those little fish that come with the sushi, lollipop sticks, hair clips, and they were bringing them home and they had buckets and buckets and buckets of stuff. So it was quite funny because I'm decluttering and meanwhile my children are collecting literally rubbish and bringing it into the home.
Yeah.
And most children weren't doing that. Most children were sliding and swinging and my boys were scrambling around in the bushes competing for who was going to find the next treasure. And I found that interesting. So I thought that'd make for a good story. I guess also too, you know, I felt a little bit like my children, you know, a bit self-conscious, I suppose. Ever so slightly, not really. I mean, I kind of accepted that this is what my children were doing, but I felt that there was maybe a bit of judgment from some other parents around watching me just allow my children to pick up rubbish. Yeah. This was pre-COVID. I think it would be different now. I'm certainly my youngest.
You'd probably just tell them to wash their hands. Like,
yeah. Well, exactly. That's what we did when we got home. Yeah. So anyway, I was going on this journey, this path, and thanks for sticking with me on this story. And I started writing a children's book about the Bowerbird boys or the Bower boys who collected things and thinking about how I could illustrate the story. And naturally I thought I need to use their collections and a bit of an homage to Jeannie Baker, the amazing collage artist illustrator that Australians will probably know well, certainly if you've been educated as a kid in the last 30 years in Australia, you know who Jeannie Baker is. Yeah, sort of using that style of collage to create illustrations and kind of didn't know how to start. And this creative girlfriend said to me, why don't you just use those collections and make art and it doesn't need to be the illustrations of the story you've written. Why don't you just start making art? And that was great advice. Thank you, Jenny. So I did. And that was sort of the beginning. And that actually started in March 2020. And suddenly I had the kids at home with me and life just slowed down. We were really slow living kind of a family already. But it was really nice to not have to get everyone out the door to preschool in the morning.
And
I just found myself, weirdly, I found myself with time because I wasn't working, I suppose.
Yeah, even though you had little ones around, you had perhaps the freedom and flexibility of time.
Yeah. And because I'd been decluttering so madly and I had set a vision during the Head, Heart and Home course that I wanted to have a creative space for myself and I'd cleared enough stuff out of the junk room that it was no longer a junk room, it was an office. And I had a desk and I had some inspirational little pictures that I put up for myself and I was able to go in there and feel calm. Mm. And then the flow, the creative thought process just flowed for me. Unfortunately, I only had the desk for 2 weeks before my husband started working from home and took over the desk.
Ben.
I know. And we also still had too many big, large furniture items in the home for us to fit a second desk in the home. So I started creating my works then late at night on large pieces of core flute that I could move around.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was creating works pretty quickly then. It would sort of, I'd knock one over in a couple of hours, take photographs of it, and then disassemble it.
A couple of hours.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Now it takes me 20 hours to make an artwork. So yeah, I'm putting more pressure on myself now. But the quality of my art has sort of improved a bit and changed.
Yeah, it's evolved.
I was trying to make quite simple artworks that were sort of inspiring to parents of young children.
Mm-hmm.
My artworks were really targeted at, young families. So I was making playful kind of little animal faces using rubbish, basically.
Yeah.
And my art took on, it brought together my two passions, which are the environment and art. And I found that it was really inspiring people, that was my hope. And then I was getting some great feedback from people that my art was motivating them to be more sustainable in their living and in their practices. So that became my goal. So now my art making mission, I suppose, is to make art completely from pre-loved and secondhand things and single-use plastics. I use a lot of single-use plastics, and each of my works is trying to send my audience a message about just treading lightly on our planet, but also in recycling and all sorts of environmental issues.
Who would have thought that a journey that started off with decluttering then merged, like there's this beautiful synchronicity. That's the one, synchronicity, between your artistic passion, your love for the environment, creating space, allowing that creativity to flow. Before we go on, can you tell people your Instagram handle so they can go and have a look, because they definitely are going to want to see your works.
Thank you. Yes, it's the Bowerbird Herd. Herd of animals. Yeah,
yes.
The Bowerbird Herd. The Bowerbird is an Australian bird. Well, there's several different Bowerbirds, and they collect things, just for the listeners that might not know what a Bowerbird is.
Yeah, they're the collectors of, they see I think in a Bowerbird, I always think they're the birds that see potential in things, and I think that is so much of what your art. I mean, sometimes I'll scroll and I'll be looking at your stuff on Instagram and I think I look at it and I forget that it's secondhand collected things, because it's so beautiful. And then when you look at the detail, you're like, oh my gosh, that's a bottle cap, or that's a ring, or that's a lollipop stick, or you forget sometimes that how rubbish can be made so beautiful.
Yeah, and I love it now. I mean, my art career is really starting to take off, which is kind of exciting. I'm a guest artist in an exhibition in October. I never really thought, I mentioned before when I looked through Facebook and I found this post that I wrote in 2019, at the end of 2019, it's before I'd signed up to the Head, Heart and Home course, and I was in that junk room and I'd found my folder of university artworks, and I didn't know. It's the folder I'd been putting off for so long, because it was the sentimental stuff. It was the stuff that was sort of symbolic of that time in my life that I felt where I had so much hope that I could become an artist. And I wrote in my Facebook post something along the lines of, this is really hard. I have to throw out these artworks. What do I do? Do I photograph them? These are from that time that was so important to me. And in my heart, I'd love to be an artist again, but with three small children, I just don't think it's going to happen. And 2 months later, or 3 months later, I was making art again, and 2 years from that on now, I actually do call myself an artist, which is just really amazing.
So awesome. What would you say to other people who are feeling that they've perhaps lost opportunity for creativity and artistry? what have been some of the habits or the space that you've given yourself that could be helpful to others who are like, wow, I would love to get back into crocheting, painting, going and collecting from the local park and creating art?
I think for me it was about connecting with other creative friends who I had, no matter how big or small they were expressing their creativity in their own lives, and talking to them and saying it out loud a lot to people and saying, oh, I've got this idea for a children's book, or, you know, I want to start painting again, and talking to my creative friends about that. If you're lucky enough, like I was, I suppose, to have some creative friends. And then also just trying to get away from the chaos of your everyday. And that might mean having a decluttered space in your home that is just your own. I hadn't had a space that was just my own since moving into that home and having children. And I carved that space out for myself. And that was really important for me. And the bushwalks, you know, like that hasn't stopped. I love going out and getting and connecting with nature, but it's just really quiet out there. So just getting away from your screens and your children. No, just getting away from people who are talking, I suppose, so that you can just think quietly. And I guess that's meditative practice for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It
sounds like you've rediscovered yourself as well. Like, I know in those early years of motherhood, it can be all consuming, but how important it is to say, I need a space. And it may not, you know, people may not have a whole room. They may just need to have that board, as you said, and maybe a wheelie trolley with their resources that they can set up wherever. It might be outside, it might be in the laundry, it might be on the kitchen bench. Like, there's how do you carve out space so that you can re-explore that side of yourself? I want to hear a little bit more about using recycled items. Have you always been that way minded, even as a child, or like what has led to going, actually, I don't want to use, I think we call them first generation materials, or like tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was raised by very environmentally conscious parents. I remember Mum lining, she did this for long enough that I remember it. She lined our rubbish bin with newspaper because she didn't want to use plastic bags.
Oh,
and it just got a bit stinky, really. So she
slimy at the end of
We had a useful box. You know, Mum would keep all the toilet paper rolls, like many kids who grew up in Australia in the 80s and probably watched Play School. We had a useful box, and made things. So all that was really fostered in me, and I think just valuing old things, you know, as well. We didn't really buy a lot of new things. I think as a kid we were wearing pre-loved clothes as well.
Yeah.
So that was already part of how I'd been raised. And then I remember watching The War on Waste on the ABC when my twin boys were quite young. Yeah. And that really sparked a fire in me. I just thought, I was astounded to see this enormous pile of clothing that they had on the screen, and they were talking about this is how many clothes are thrown out worldwide every minute or something.
It was mortifying.
It was really mortifying. And I just, that really started the ball rolling for me. I wrote an article for my local district mum's Facebook page because I'd written a post on there where they'd said, I'd written a post on there saying, hey, you know, something about being sustainable, and it had heaps and heaps and heaps of comments, and there was a real interest in that. So the admins of the page asked me to write an article on living more sustainably as a parent with small children. So I went through that process, and that got me really thinking about the things I was doing. And then I had girlfriends with small children around me start to say, oh, I really love how, you know, you are taking your muesli bar wrappers home to put them in your soft plastics, and tell me more about your soft plastic recycling. What is it that you do?
You were ahead of the game on that one.
I just talked a lot about composting and things that I was doing at home.
And it became probably second nature, because I think there is a hurdle when you start to, you know, set aside the soft plastics or do whatever that next step is for you. So for some people, it would be like, oh, I really should actually recycle my milk cartons. And for other people, they're like, well, where can I recycle my toothbrushes? So, you know, I think there's a spectrum and a journey. And there is somewhat of a mental hurdle to overcome where you think it's going to be arduous, laboursome, annoying, dirty, messy, time-consuming. You think, you know, you build it up and then you're like, oh, this is actually aligns with my values. And so, therefore, the small amount of time that I invest in it only goes to serve the values that I have around sustainability and looking after the environment and reusing. And so I love when people start that journey. And it does sound like you're ahead of the game. And then actually saying to people, this is possible. Like, you can do this. This is part of, you know, we say that we care about the environment, but this is part of that.
And I think the space, having the space to do it is a big thing as well. I had a bucket under my sink where I was shoving my soft plastics, and it was a bit, you know, it's under the sink area can get a bit gross. And it was a very old home that we were renting in. We've moved into a new home now and it has four rubbish bins in a pull-out drawer. So I have a massive soft plastics bin. And my kids were really into craft, no surprises as to why. And they were bringing home a lot of stuff from preschool covered in paddle pop sticks and plastic buttons and beads and things like that. And actually their preschool is an incredibly great place and they're really into recycling there. But I was pulling, when I was throwing their craft out, I was pulling those buttons and paddle pop sticks off the craft because I just couldn't bear to put them in the rubbish bin when we could make something else with them. And I started to think about how I had a ribbon collection, because when I receive gifts from people, I keep the ribbon because definitely it's going to be reused, and I even keep the gift wrap if I can.
Yeah.
And my friends know that they're going to get a present from me that might have some tears in the paper, and that's okay.
Perfect.
And so through my art, and then the boys, of course, had these buckets and buckets of stuff that they'd collected, which I also was decluttering and throwing out so that we had one tub and not five tubs of rubbish cluttering our back deck. And when I was going through that process of decluttering the collections, I was finding useful little things, like there was a unicorn bouncy ball and there was a unicorn ring and there was a unicorn hair clip. And suddenly I found myself going, oh, I just can't. I know this is a dirty thing that's, it actually has dirt on it. And no one in my family probably is ever going to wear a unicorn hair clip, although they did. They did. The boys used to love putting their hair clips on when they were younger. I just felt there was a second life for these objects. I just actually couldn't bring myself to throw them in the bin.
Yeah,
and this was just, you know, that child who'd watched too much play school who wanted to create coming out in me again. So that's actually how it started. The first artwork I made was a bowerbird, just with blue stuff that the boys had collected. And then I made a lion out of all the yellow ribbon.
Yellows, yeah, yeah.
That I had. And then we went into a lockdown and I made an owl out of corks, like all the things, because everyone was talking about how all of a sudden they had to be teachers at home of their own children. And people were making jokes about how much more alcohol they were consuming. So I made an owl out of corks and bottle top lids with newspaper clippings for the wings. And on one of the wings it said, "Don't panic," because that's actually the headline on our local paper when everyone was going into a lockdown. It said, "Don't panic." And the owl was a bit cross-eyed and it was called the Wasted Scholar. Because all of a sudden we had to be scholars at home and we were all apparently wasted. So I thought that was quite funny.
That's great.
And then I went on, I made a duck out of bread tags and bread bags. We find a lot of, or the boys used to find a lot of bread tags littered in playgrounds. So I made a duck.
Playgrounds?
In playgrounds, because people are having picnics.
Yeah, right.
You know, those rice, those corn thins come with bread tags.
Yeah, yep.
People are snacking on those and dropping their bread tags. So I made a duck and I called it "Don't Feed the Ducks," because people obviously should not be feeding bread to ducks. So I used bread bags and bread.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I made a worm out of egg cartons, and it was all about composting and trying to encourage people to compost their egg cartons and talking about all the things we can compost. And I made a magpie out of black cable ties because it's magpie swooping season here in Australia now, and people
helmets.
Put cable ties in their helmets to try and deter the magpies. So I made a magpie out of cable ties, and I was finding cable ties all over the ground in playgrounds because council workers had come and removed the playground closure signs when the first COVID lockdown stopped.
All the boundaries and the cable ties.
They were left on the ground. So, yeah, I was really exploring litter and making art with it.
And storytelling. And there's a really strong storytelling theme through it all.
Trying to promote all just sustainable practices, I suppose. Oh. And my artwork was really targeted at young children and families. So then I started doing tours of primary schools and workshops for young children and bringing my teaching into it as well. So it's actually just led to this really fulfilling career for me now. And, yeah, like I said, I'm calling myself an artist and it's really exciting. And I'm making works as well that adults actually want to buy and put on their walls, which is exciting.
Yeah, because they're beautiful. Like they're not just, you know, they're not the play school useful box thing.
Yeah. one of my works... Yeah, it's a really huge unicorn. It's made out of single-use birthday party plastics and she's very sparkly. Oh. And I use her on my workshops because the kids love her. And she's got that bouncy ball that I was telling you about as her eye.
I haven't seen her. I'll have to have a look on your Insta and have a look at her.
And one of the mums came up and asked me if she could buy it. And I said, oh, sorry, I need this one.
It's a teaching resource.
You never know. So I shouldn't assume that people don't want to buy, you know, the possum that's made out of hubcaps and the unicorn that's made out of birthday party waste, because maybe they do.
Of course they do, because they it's a story piece as well in your home. Like I can only imagine if you've got that and you've got it displayed and someone comes in, they're like, tell me about this artwork, because then you can say, well, this, you know, this is the story, and there's that inspiration and education, which obviously are both important to you.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I want to jump back to the play school comment of the useful box, because I grew up with a useful box. And I think when I went to kinder, there was a useful box because each family would bring things for the useful box. And it was over summer when you had your paddle pops, when you'd finish licking them, you would take them to kinder for artwork. But nowadays, most of the suppliers in any kinder, childcare, school are first generation products. So there aren't the lollipop sticks that you've used. They're brand new lollipop sticks to do the artwork with. And so the useful box, you know, you used to be able to, I used to do toilet paper people or toilet roll people, and I would make families because I saw it once on play school. And so you'd have like off cuts of fabric or textiles hair, and you'd have buttons as eyes and all of these things. But once my kids were at primary school, you couldn't donate toilet rolls. They had to buy the toilet rolls brand new from the supplier. So for families, obviously you can reuse things, but where's the limit, Nick? How do you go from, you know, having two tubs of things and art supplies? How do you store them? How do you put a limit on it? How do you decide what to let go of? And when you are letting go of things, what do you do with them? Do you just put them in the bin? Do you tell me all the things?
Yeah, I do have a lot of people offering me things now because I have this community now of followers who love what I do, and they say, hey, so just last week somebody contacted me and said, I have this rusty old bike, and my daughter said, give it to the artistic lady, which was so nice. And I just had to say, oh, thank you, but my garage is at capacity, and I actually, which is true, and I don't have space for that right now. What I've done with my collections, I have obviously a lot of plastic lids, but I've found a place where you can, Lids for Kids, they're called in Australia. Mm. It's a community of people around, certainly around the city of Sydney, but I think they're in other cities as well, a community of volunteers who will collect plastic lids. So when I find that I have too many plastic lids, I can sort them by colour, make sure they're clean, and give them to Lids for Kids, who recycle them and turn them into prosthetic hands for children.
Ah, we'll put a link to that in the show notes. That's awesome.
Yeah, Lids for Kids. Lids four, the number four. I've containerized. I have large tubs stacked up in my garage for those collections that I take along to workshops.
Yeah, great.
I've used the bags when you buy a pillow or a quilt, they come in a big plastic bag with a handle.
With a zip and a handle.
And they're clear so I can see what's in there. So they're really great. So my collections for workshops are actually stored in those bags inside tubs stacked up.
Oh, excellent.
Just to kind of keep them out of the way. Mm-hmm. And then in my office, my actual art studio is a very small desk, and members of the Head, Heart and Home community just last Sunday night suggested to me, because I was feeling a bit, things had become a bit chaotic and messy around my desk as I'm trying to complete a series of bird artworks at the moment and I'm on a deadline. They said, why don't you just pull out a trestle table and put it in your office and just allow yourself to expand for this for this chapter. And I've done that and it's great. So I do have like one of those, a couple of those IKEA Kallax units in my office with baskets that are labeled and collections in there that I'm specifically saving up for future artworks. So I have a collection of fashion related waste. I listened to your interview with Claire Press at the end of 2019 and I was so inspired. Claire. Yeah, that was a great, great interview. And I decided I needed to make an artwork about fast fashion. So I have a collection in there of kind of labels and plastic coat hangers and things. So I'm saving those. And then I have a collection of soy sauce fish, those little. And if it's not something I'm collecting for an artwork that I have a plan for and I can't see it as something that kids could use in my workshops, then I just say no thank you to it, or I chuck it in the bin, or I recycle it if it's something I've found. When we're out now, I do river cleanups organized by this amazing local Kelly, and I found with her, actually we found, and a lot of volunteers, we found over 2,000 lollipop sticks in the Parramatta River.
What?
Yeah, bonkers. People are dropping them on the playground and they're washing down drains into the river.
Wow.
Over 2,000. So we made a giant lollipop out of those. But now I don't need to save lollipop sticks anymore.
Yeah.
I'm still picking them up, but I'm just chucking them in the bin.
But they're in the bin. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just quite mindful about what I actually need to be collecting and what I don't. And if I have five gardening magazines for my birds, my backyard garden birds that I'm making, five magazines is enough.
Yeah, so you've got those natural limits on things.
Yeah,
and I think the containerization is really key too, because sometimes that useful box can just become a whole lot of stuff that has no purpose because there are tiny little bits of ribbon down the bottom. You know, and if people are thinking, wow, Nick's got like Kallax units and a garage full of things, you could get a tackle box and actually have, you know, you might only have 15 buttons and that fits in a spot in a tackle box, or you could get, you know, those craft storage that might be a few drawers. So you can containerize and you can have that scaled to the appropriateness of whatever your hobby is going to be and how you're going to reuse things.
Yeah. And another key thing for me I should mention is just my local Pay It Forward community on Facebook. Mm. There's a really strong community there. So the decluttering process for me is a slow process because I really struggle to put things in the rubbish bin, unless, of course, it is rubbish. So I pay it forward things, even empty jars. I'll collect enough empty pesto jars until I have 10, and then somebody will want them. So really sort of thinking about the things that we have and what is the second use for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you mentioned those plastic drawers, and I picked up some of those on the side of the road.
Yeah, it's perfect.
recently, but I've realized I don't need them, so I'm going to pay it forward those ones, and somebody will use them.
There's an episode that we did with one of our community members, Sylvia, called The Holding Zone, and that's where we talk about a lot of what we're talking about. So those items where you're recycling or you're wanting to take them to, you know, your batteries, your light globes, your toothbrushes, all the different things that you can recycle. Yeah. And I think what I'm hearing for you is one of the keys is you don't seem to delay a lot of your decisions. So you're like, yes, I'm keeping the pesto jars, but at 10, I put it on the pay it forward site. And yes, I'm keeping, you know, feathers, but they're contained to this amount of size.
That's right.
Do you find that is that a true reflection of how you've managed to contain it so that you can continue to be creative?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It wasn't always that way. That's the mindset change that's happened for me in decluttering. I had a massive bag of colourful feathers. I remember how in one of your episodes you referred to how that made you puff up whenever you saw a craft feather, and I giggled because I had craft feathers everywhere.
Yeah, craft feathers are my nemesis.
Yeah. Well, somebody had given me a bag of craft feathers, and it was huge. It was just more craft feathers than any person needed. So, yeah, I gave away a bunch of those, and I remember getting messages from a couple of my local friends going, don't you need those feathers? You're a crafty person.
Have you gone crazy?
Yeah. I thought, oh, isn't this so funny, the thing that people have time to message you about? Yeah, I said, yeah, I do. I've kept a small container of craft feathers. And you know, that was 2 years ago, and I still have that small container of craft feathers. I probably didn't need to keep any of them because clearly we don't use craft feathers. But, yeah, that is definitely a true reflection, and it's somewhere I've gotten to, and the containerization is key to that, having those limits.
And how would you encourage families to do that with children? So I love containerizing things, and a lot of our listeners do. How do you, if I've got a child that's super creative, loves that bowerbird, like I want to go and collect things, any ideas on how to do that for them? Or is the useful box, chuck it all in together, better for the way their brains work? Tell us from your teacher side of things.
Oh, look, I think for me, I have the plastic pull-out drawers, and inside one plastic drawer, I have four containers. Mm-hmm. None of them have lids on them.
Yep.
One has texters, one has crayons, one has pencils, one has more texters. I can pull that whole drawer out or just the texters and stick them on the table. Then there's another drawer that just has the toilet paper rolls in it, and I can pull that out and they can rummage. But I definitely feel for me, and I've been through all of the different versions I had at the old place.
I can imagine the iterations would be many.
Yeah. At the old place where we had no storage, I had one of those four cube Calax units, and I just had a big pull-out cube where all of the paper and scraps would go, and it didn't really get used. It just became a messy thing because they had to deep dive.
Yes.
They had to dig down and excavate to see what was down there, and it just didn't work. So a shallower container with the toilet rolls and the useful bits of cardboard or ribbon or whatever that they can access, and the rest I just recycle. If that container's too full, I have to recycle it. But it's been a real journey for me. Like I remember – and I saw this as I said, when I Googled my name, there was a whole washing basket late at night where I chucked out craft because they were bringing home so much craft from preschool and then making even more of it. And every item was so precious. There's even a Bluey episode about it. You know, you've got to throw the craft out when they're not looking. And then I created a big folder where I'd put their favorite things, and now they've taken ownership of that because they're seven. They love to look through their craft folder, and now they're throwing out, they're decluttering themselves. One of my boys in particular is an amazing declutterer, and he will just go through and be ruthless and say, I don't need these paintings, these finger paintings I did when I'm four. And I'm there going, oh, but just why don't you just keep one of them?
Yeah, could mommy keep one in her special box?
Yeah, exactly. I think I might have a few in my special box.
It sounds like one of the
accessible containers.
Yeah, and I think the clear containers is something you've mentioned a few times where if you cannot have a lid, because it's in a drawer, don't have the lid on. Because I imagine, and I'm not artistic, I'm quite creative, but I'm not artistic at all. My husband's quite artistic, is that sometimes you need that visual inspiration. So if you've got a whole box of papers, you can't see that tiny shred of metallic that actually gives you the idea of I'm going to create a robot. And so actually being able to see things perhaps is also part of, you know, inspiring yourself to do the things rather than just collect the things.
Yeah. My three-year-old will go over to our craft cupboard now and he'll open it up and there is a box sitting there with paper in it, which is the paper to make your art with. And if there is not a white piece on the top, but there is a colourful piece on the top, he'll stand there and look at me and say, I need white paper. And I'm there going, it's in the box. You just need to dig down.
But yeah,
it's
just not go
right
with you.
In front of him. So he struggles because it's not right in front of his face.
Yeah,
that probably just speaks to his personality a bit as well, actually. You need to, and like, perhaps just, I just need to train him.
Yeah, just put a magazine holder on the inside of the door that just has white paper for him.
White paper, yeah, exactly.
Right. I think that there's so much that people are going to take away. Is there anything I haven't asked that you think, actually, that would be really, really helpful for our community, that you're like just itching to tell them more about this thing?
Not that I can think of, other than to keep on chipping away at your clutter because, yeah, and set your goal, set your vision, think about what it is, the big picture thing that you want, because I think it's easy to get bogged down in the everyday and the mess and tick off all the little things off the box, like emptying the dishwasher. But ultimately, if those big dreams and goals aren't happening.
But that's part of it, is that you set the vision. And even sometimes when we set vision, we feel like it is so far away, but we're sitting here 3 years later. And as you said, thanks to setting that vision and doing the decluttering and freeing yourself, you call yourself an artist. And not only do you call yourself an artist, you are an artist.
Yeah.
Like, that is phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it's really nice when you think of it and you hear it summarized like that, because I definitely wouldn't have been here if I'd still kept living in that overwhelming clutter. I wouldn't be here now. So, yeah.
Oh, Nick.
Thanks to you and Kirsty.
Thanks to your hard work and your commitment to your dreams and helping, you know, live out your own values, because that's like, what is the purpose of decluttering if it's not that you get to live an exciting, free, doing the things you love life? Like, if you just decluttered so you could sit there and go, great, I've got a decluttered house, that's not much fun.
Yeah. And it's actually, I will add that it's constant. The clutter comes back in. You know, I'm struggling with that now in my art space. So, but it's having the skills to remember that, you know, if you can just carve out a couple of hours to clear that space again, then you can get back to your creative work. And the decluttering is constant. It doesn't end, but it just becomes, like you've spoken about the muscles, and once they're there, it just becomes easier. Mm. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to read a review, Nick. Usually Kirsty reads them when they're so small on the screen, but I'm just going to see if, there we go, I can make it a little bit bigger. This is a review from Abigail in Canada. She says, hi, I'm French. Oh, it says, love your podcast, and it's a 5-star review. Hi, I'm French, now living in Canada, Quebec. I love listening to you two every week. Lots of interesting ideas. I've listened to all of your episodes, which is very impressive. Still have lots of work to do in the house, but I know I can always go back and find the perfect episode for each task. And I think that is part of the benefit of being over 300 episodes, is that we're talking about new things every week, because we haven't talked about creating art from recycled products. We haven't talked about becoming an artist before. But when it comes to your laundry, just go find an episode about laundry. Just search laundry and you'll find what you need. But if you do have that passion, that creativity, maybe it's music, maybe it's you want to foster care and you know that the junk room's the thing holding you back, like, use that vision, as Nick said, to propel yourself, to have the motivation, and then you free yourself to do the things that you love.
Mm.
Nick, what a pleasure. What a pleasure.
Thanks,
please,
Amy.
Everybody, go over to Instagram and just have your mind blown. I'm going to go find this unicorn because I have not seen her. Does she have a name?
She's called Paulette the Party Pony. She is a unicorn.
I love it. I will go find Paulette.
Thank you.
We'll pop some links in our show notes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy and Kirsty. Feel better.
Feel better, Kirst. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks,
bye. Nick. Bye.
Thanks for joining us. If you've learnt something awesome today, we'd love you to leave us a review on iTunes or Facebook so others can find our podcast too.
Don't forget, you can see the show notes in your podcast app or over at our website, artofdecluttering.com.au. So if there's anything you want more info on, check it out there.
If you'd like to join our supporter community, you can do so over at patreon.com/theartofdecluttering.
We hope you have a great rest of your day
and enjoy the freedom.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture.
We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavour. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to. Courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.